97.5, The Fanatic.
I promise you we'll get to Eagles talk. I promise. But something just kind of came across my desk. AKA, I got an email on my phone. There is no desk. It's just my phone. But anyway, it came to me, and I really am kind of perplexed as to why this is happening the way it is. So the Sixers win tonight 110-104. And I just get some of the game notes. And I'm scrolling through some of the notes and briefings and all that, and all the questions that were then asked in the post-game press conference. And what really piqued my interest were the questions that were asked to Joel Embiid. Here's what Joel Embiid was asked tonight after the Sixers win 110-104 over the Toronto Raptors. How good does it feel to get a win over Toronto? What does it feel like to watch Matisse Thybulle play well? How do you get people in foul trouble early on in games? And how do you feel Ben Simmons has been playing over the last couple games? Now, Dylan and I were discussing this, and I know it's easier said than done. And we get Twitter fingers, and we get tough guy muscles when we talk about these things. But I want to know why a question was not asked to Joel Embiid about the propensity to turn the ball over late in games. Wow. What happens when the double team comes? What goes through your mind when you see a double team coming? Why did you have 7 turnovers? Why 3 in the fourth quarter late? Why did the team have 8 turnovers in 8 minutes? Why did you go 6 minutes or 5 minutes with 1 bucket? These tough questions don't get asked. I wish they would. And again, I know it's easier said than done. I also know that the story is the win, and the story is what the story is. Not going to make stuff up, and you're not going to go blow up a spot of somebody that just won a basketball game. But I do need to question why sometimes, even in wins, these things don't get asked. Because following up with that, now let me find these because I just lost the quotes. At least the first question asked by Brett Brown was what happened late in the game. So at least someone took the mantle of asking the question, what happened? And I'm not going to read you the whole thing. It's a little bit of a long one, but here's what Brett Brown said. Some of the passing decisions were things that we have to get better at. I'm not really sure how you address some of it. Not really sure how you address some of it. Follows that up with, you just scratch your head and try and coach better. BB, I got to tell you, man. I've said it earlier in the show. I'm a staunch supporter of yours. I give you a lot of credit. I think you've done a lot of really good things. You can't tell me that you don't know how to fix turnovers. Because if we're going to have the conversation and we're looping it back to 9 o'clock this evening, almost 2 hours ago, when the show started, we had a couple of callers say that it's a spacing issue, that it's a double team issue, that it's a Joel Embiid issue, whatever you want to blame it on. We've got armchair coaches telling you what they think it is. Now, they may be right, they may be wrong, I may be right, I may be wrong. I'm not on the floor with you, you're on the floor with you. So if they have opinions, and I have opinions, and Dylan McKinnon has an opinion, you've got to believe that something somewhere is fixable. So to tell me you're scratching your head and you got to do a better job coaching, I know it's coach speak. I know we're not going to get the answer out of you that we really want to hear. But at some point, I need an answer. For my mental sanity, I need accountability. And Dylan needs accountability. And everyone that's called in tonight and everyone that's going to call all of our shows tomorrow need accountability. We need to hear somebody say something about why the turnovers are persistent. Because, Dylan, you have a thought on it, I'd imagine, right?
I do.
What's your thought on it?
Well, from the ones I saw, at least the ones late in game, and this is why probably Brett didn't say
it. Well, late in game particularly, yeah. But I guess just across the course of the season, a caller earlier said that they're consistently in the bottom five of turnovers. Yeah. He's right.
In this game, at the end, it was, some of it was just laziness. And the coach is never going to say, oh, that was just laziness from them. But what it was is there was multiple ones where they'd inbound it, and then Toronto's playing high press, but everyone besides the person who caught the inbound goes up court, so no one's back there to help him get out of it. That's just laziness. That's just players thinking, oh, we're up big in this. We don't need to worry anymore. And I guess that's why he didn't want to address it tonight, because that's just not something. You don't want to call your players lazy, but it's what it was at the end. Overall, it's something.
Well, it's why the Sixers struggle in the fourth quarter so often.
Yeah.
You're right. I don't know. I don't know if it's. I never, ever, unless it's visibly noticeable, will question a man's effort. Yeah. I just won't do it. I think they're too prideful of players to question a man's effort. But what I will tell you is that it looks like they're in the wrong spot at the right time. And that's consistently a thing. Now, Brett Brown was later asked about Joel Embiid's performance tonight, and he had high praise for the most part, which I think is fair. Embiid was good for the most part. And he did say that at the end they pressed and he had some rough decisions to make. It's unfortunate because for the large part of the game, he was one of the main reasons we won. It won't jump out to you in the stat sheet, but it's Joel Embiid and his length. Correct. But I would like you to delve more into the traps at the end of the game, the turnovers at the end of the game, and what went wrong. I know what went right. The Sixers won the game. That's how I know it went right. But there are still systematic issues that prove to me that there are things that are going wrong with the Sixers team that are not being fixed or are not being accounted for that I think need to change. And it has to happen before May. It has to probably happen before, let's say, the end of March. Because we know that the Sixers went on a huge, massive run 2 years ago. And it propelled them to where they were, propelled them to get the Heat in the first round. But you can't count on a 16-game winning streak every single year. It didn't happen last year. They won. They got to the, what were they, the 2 seed last year? They got the 2 seed based on how they played throughout the season. This team should be the 2 seed again. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But in order to be the 2 seed, you have to have these things fixed. Because the Bucks right now are better than you. The Celtics right now are par, if not better than you. I think you're better than Toronto, but Toronto, again, poses matchup problems. So you have to have these things figured out by the time that the playoffs start to roll around. Because the last 15 games of the year are going to be massively important. And in fact, let's take a look at the last 15 games of the year. And while I do that, Dylan, you look like you've got a pretty important thought in your head. So go ahead.
Well, just to bring a little, because we've spent a lot of time talking about the Sixers and being negative about how the game ended, but I just wanted to bring some positivity to it. If the Sixers, let's say all things are equal and all four of the top teams in the East play their best basketball, I think the Sixers are the best team of this group.
You think they're better than the Bucks?
If both sides are playing the absolute best, I think the Sixers can beat the Bucks.
Is it safe to say, without a doubt, that the Bucks have the best player, but the Sixers are the better team?
Oh, yeah.
When they play at the top?
Giannis is a better player than almost anyone in the league. He's a top three player right now. But I think you saw them have issues in the playoffs last year, especially against the Raptors, where you kind of get into a place where Giannis is doing all the work and no one else. If you can shut down a couple of the other guys, Giannis can't. No one player can do it all by themselves.
Well, it's true. And Giannis can, but again, if you shut him down, you have a much different team. And the Sixers aren't that team. You and I discussed this. Carl Namoli, who produced the game today, he and I discussed this as well. The Sixers are not a team that need to rely on Joel Embiid every single night. Because you can rely on Ben Simmons to win you a game. You can rely on Tobias Harris to win you a game. Al Horford can steal you a game. Jay Rich can steal you a game. I mean, even for what it's worth, Mike Scott was fantastic last night against the Cavs. Obviously, Ben Simmons was the shining star, but Mike Scott was great. Tobias Harris was great tonight. Matisse Thybulle was great tonight. So you look at this team and you go, they don't need one particular player to be great, but they do need everybody together to be great. That whole sum of the parts needs to be greater than each individual aspect. And we were just talking about schedule and how it's tough to go on, you know, you can't bank on a 16-game winning streak. Take a listen to the last, 12-odd games of the regular season. And we're going to move backwards. Charlotte, Memphis, New Orleans, San Antonio, all currently out of the playoffs. The Bucks at home, the Magic, Washington, Houston and Portland, Phoenix, Chicago, and Atlanta and Charlotte. And another game against Washington with Toronto sandwiched in between. It favors the Sixers. So if they can get this thing figured out, if they can weather this storm and get it figured out quickly, I mean, there's nothing to say that when you start March and your hardest stretch is your first two games where you play at the Staples Center on 2 of 3 nights, you play the Clippers and the Lakers back-to-back, and then you have games against teams like Golden State, who obviously are nowhere near the shell of a former self. You get Washington twice, you get Atlanta, you get Charlotte twice. That is how you make yourself the 2 seed. But you have to be able to get to that point. And when you get to that point, you have to beat these teams when you're supposed to beat them. You cannot lose to the Washington Wizards on the road. Have to beat the Washington Wizards. You have to beat the Charlotte Hornets. These are games that are must-win games. And we're already looking ahead to March. But the way to get to March is by accomplishing the things you need to accomplish in December. 610-632-0975. Sixers beat the Toronto Raptors 110-104 this evening. They got done about 2 hours ago just to this point. We've been kind of talking about it and breaking it down from a micro level because that's the way that you have to look at this team because their ceiling is so high. And in fact, their floor is high. Their floor should be the Eastern Conference Finals. It should be. Now, if it gets to that point, and it's not the way that we thought it would be, we'll reevaluate that. You're allowed to move benchmarks. But right now, the floor is way too high to be having these kind of games where you win by 6 after holding a 20-point lead. We'll also talk about the Eagles as well. The Eagles get set to go against the New York Football Giants tomorrow, 8:15 kickoff against the G-Men. And, you know, again, I've said this 100 times today, and I'm going to keep reiterating it. This is not a game that I feel confident in. Do I think they win? Yes. Do I feel confident? Absolutely not. The New York Giants have not won a game since September 29th. This league is a league of ebbs and flows, and right now, the Eagles and the Giants both are on the downturn of things. Things don't look good. But they held the Chicago Bears to 19 points. They held the Arizona Cardinals to 27. There's been some blowouts in the mix. But to me, I look at this Eagles team and I go, I don't have any faith to say that they're going to blow out the New York Giants. I think it would almost be ridiculous for me to say that they could blow out the New York Giants because they don't blow out anybody. In their 5 wins this year, they won by 8. 18, that's probably a blowout to the Buffalo Bills. 25 to the New York Jets, that was expected when Luke Falk was the quarterback. 7 to the Packers, and 5 to the Washington Redskins. Now, Dylan, I'll ask you. Much like you take away certain games, like you can scratch off the 48-7 loss to the New Orleans Saints last year. The Eagles weren't ready to play that game. The Saints were revving on all cylinders. It was a disaster game from the get-go. I think you can take off the 31-6 win against the Jets because the defense played outstanding, scored twice, by the way, and in reality, the offense scored 17 points. So if you take away those two defensive touchdowns, which thankfully on the scoreboard you don't, but if you take away those two defensive touchdowns, you're left with a 17-6 win over Luke Falk and the New York Jets. So at this point, a blowout I don't think is feasible. To say a win, sure. If they lose this game, I don't think that it's a massive stretch. I think that they're better than the Giants. I think that their talent-wise is a lot better than the Giants. But to say that the Eagles have blown anybody off this off the field this season, I think is incorrect. So do you have any confidence that they could get a... And even with this team, a blowout is 13 points. Can they win a 13-14-point game?
The only thing that makes me think yes is, like you said, it is an ebb and flow league, and the Eagles are due for a big flow. They've been ebbing for a while.
It's been low tide for a really long time.
When you keep seeing that tide come back and back and back, eventually it's going to come forward. I don't think this is a good team. As bad as the Cowboys have also been, I don't know if I wouldn't be confident in that game. But
Dylan, I got to tell you, I really got to tell you, I am down on this team. I don't think they're very good. I don't believe there's a blowout in the works tomorrow. I do believe the Eagles are going to win the division, and they'll probably win the division at 8-8. I don't think they win all four of these games, but if you win this game and you beat the Cowboys, I believe you only have to win one of the other two between the Redskins and the Giants, and I believe you win the division at 8-8. Because then I think the best the Cowboys could be is also 8-8, because they're 6-7. And if you beat the Cowboys, that runs them to a minimum of 8 losses. And I think at that point the Eagles have the divisional lead and the tiebreaker of common opponent.
Would they have the divisional lead? Because then Eagles would have 2 division losses.
Do the Cowboys?
Cowboys don't have a division.
They don't have one yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I guess you do have to win 3 of 4.
Or you need if you lose
or the Cowboys to lose another game. Yeah. Which is all, I mean, to be fair, you look at that team and you go, it's 100% feasible. So you mentioned the ebbs and flows, and we talked about that a little bit earlier, and you just brought it back up. The ebbs and flow of the Eagles season has been so unpredictable, because again, they've beaten 2 teams in the Bills and the Packers that I think they had no right to beat, at least on paper, and they've lost to 2 teams in the Lions and the Dolphins. I still think that the Falcons are a talented team, and they're now, I believe they're now a 5-win team. I think they're 5-7 now with their win over the Panthers today. Oh, they're 4-9. Sorry. But anyway, they're a more talented team than their record states. They got off to a bad start. So I don't count that game, but I do count the fact that they lost to the Lions, and I do count the fact that they lost to the Dolphins. And those 2 games, I think, are the ones that are going to come back to bite you if you don't win this division, because you're not getting in as a wild card. It's just not happening. So to me, I have such an unpredictability factor about this team that I don't have confidence in them blowing anybody out. Now, I will tell you this. I've been saying all show, I don't think that they're a 9.5-point favorite over anybody. But what I will tell you is they could win this game by 10 or 11 in the case of that it's a 14-3 win. Because I do think their defense is good. It's just going to come down to, are they susceptible to that quick play that Eli Manning is famous for? And if they can topple that, I think they could win a game 14-3, 17-6, 10-0. I mean, it's going to be an ugly game. And especially since the weather forecast, by the way, calls for rain literally all day, let's take a look at the latest one, starting at 1 a.m. today, running through sunrise, running through 10 o'clock. And that's the farthest it lets me go. 70% chance of rain almost all day. It's going to be sloppy. It's going to be ugly. The field will probably be in bad shape. It's going to be tough to throw the football. So you're going to see quick plays, and you're going to see a lot of running the football. I think that leads to a defensive game. They could very well, in theory, win this game 14-6. You know, 14-3, 17-7. And not only is it a win, and it's a big-time win to get you off the slide, it's a cover. I don't like it. I think it's going to be an ugly game. The fact that we had 4 really legitimate football games today get played at 1 and 4 o'clock, and even I think at 8 o'clock, even though the Rams pretty much dismantled or were dismantling, I have to probably check on that score before I make that comment.
It is 28-12 Rams with 40 seconds left.
It is still a beatdown. I think a 16-point win over the Seahawks at any point, I don't care that it's on the or they're on the road, a 16-point win over the Seahawks is a season saver for the Rams. You had that game. You had Baltimore-Buffalo. The 49ers-Saints was unreal. And then you had the Chiefs and the Patriots, which did lose some luster, but it was still a good game. And you've got this dreck on Monday night. In the rain, at the link, no one wants to go, no one wants to watch this game. But here we are, with the Eagles having a chance to get to 6-7 and tie for the divisional lead. It's weird. 610-632-0975. We've got a couple of segments left to go. Tom and Philly, we will get you up on the other side. We will talk about the Sixers and Ben Simmons. We'll continue that conversation. And the Eagles conversation as well as we move on towards midnight. He's Dylan McKinnon. I am Tyler Zulli. We're right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Half an hour left here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Thanks for hanging out late with me tonight, staying up and talking some Sixers hoops and Eagles football as we get ready for Monday Night Football here for the Eagles. They're 5-7. They go on and take on the 2-10 New York Giants. We're also talking about the Sixers, obviously, a 110-104 victory over the defending champs, the Toronto Raptors, and I'm not happy. Maybe I'm just an angry person. Maybe I'm like Scrooge around the holidays. But something about tonight's win set me off. And I don't know if it's what we talked about earlier with pacing and spacing, or we talked about it, what we talked about earlier with the turnovers late. Maybe it's a combination of everything. But something set me off despite the fact that they won the game by 6 over the Toronto Raptors, and it was a good home win. They've now won back-to-back games at home. Or I should say this weekend, they've won 12 straight at home. And they've won 6 of their last 7 games. They've won 10 of their last 12. This is a good team. And I'm straight up nitpicking.
Positive takeaway for tonight. Ben Simmons, another elite defensive night. He shut down Siakam basically all night. Siakam got some minutes at the end, some points at the end. But most of the game, Siakam was a non-factor. That's all Ben Simmons.
It's a good observation there, Dylan. I think you're right. We talked about this during the break that Ben Simmons should be on track to be in the finals for Defensive Player of the Year. We always know that Rudy Gobert is going to be there, but Ben Simmons has been absolutely locked down defensively. I'm going to, right before we get to Tom in Philly, I'm going to go to Ben Simmons and try to find his defensive efficiency ratings and see if what we can come up with, because I truly believe he has got to be top 5 or 10 in this defensive efficiency rating category. So the one that they've got highlighted on NBA.com is the defensive win shares, which is not a great test, I think, because you have to look at the position and positional value. Like, DeAndre Ayton is currently number one. He's played one game. So that's, I think that's kind of an unfair assessment. But really what I want to go to is the defensive rating and take a look at the eligible players. Jonah Bolden last, by the way, 166.7. Maybe that's, wait, is that first? No, that's got to be last. Okay, he's 463rd. Let's try to find out where Ben Simmons is real quickly. And now the search bar won't work.
Bolden's played like, what, 2 minutes all season?
Yeah, it's not been a lot. It was just more almost kind of funny that that's the case. So while I try to find this, let's go to Tom in Philly. Tom, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic.
You know, I don't think you're nitpicking. I think a lot of people are missing the forest for the trees. Ben Simmons is an awesome player, but in the NBA, as constructed with the players you have in the Sixers, he can't be a point guard.
That's not true!
Why not?
Because he's there's ways you he can't run the set offense. You can I hear the guy yelling in the background. You need
no, that was just a phone drop. You're okay.
All right. If you have a regular point guard and play Simmons at 2, 3, or 4, where he becomes an opportunity movement guy to the basket, he's very big. Being that big, and he's a little tight in the groin. He can't move laterally that well, and he doesn't have a shot. That just presents problems that are almost impossible to overcome in a 7-game series where everyone knows what everyone's doing by the time you get there. But if you had even like within the top 12 point guards in the league, they can dribble left or right. They have a pull up either way. They know how to pick and roll, and you leave Simmons just roaming and then get to him on the weak side and get him the ball opportunity wise. I believe all problems are solved.
Tom, let's play point counterpoint here real quick, because I think that you probably have some merit to your argument. Now, here's my counterpoint to that.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is one of the top 5 defensive point guards in the league. He consistently shuts down whatever guy he's defending, including Pascal Siakam tonight, who couldn't get anything going offensively. I think that his court vision is too important to the Sixers to have him not play point guard. And finally, I think that...
No, I'm talking set offense.
So you're talking strictly in the half court.
Yes, but you can move him all over the place. He's like, you play him 2, 3, or 4, you put him on whoever you want, but he can't run point guard all the time because of spacing problems he has. Even being as large as he is and not moving laterally that well, he can't get in there. It's a waste of his effort. Just get a point guard that's one of the top 12 that knows how to maneuver.
Well,
Kemba Walker B. Then I know you can't say the money. Then you have Ben just roaming, doing whatever he wants. And of course, he's got the ball in his hand coming up. Yeah, point forward, point whatever.
Okay. So you want to have Ben play the point in transition, and then when they get to the half court, you've got to have somebody else. So here's my only thing, my only issue with that sentiment. And Tom, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks, man. Here's my only concern is Brett Brown has vocally said he does not want Ben Simmons in the dunker position. Said it multiple times. So if he knows that Ben Simmons is uncomfortable in that low block at the opposite side, and Ben Simmons knows he's uncomfortable in the low block at the opposite side, the other teams in the NBA know that he is uncomfortable in that dunker position. To me, Ben Simmons is too valuable for what he does well at the point guard position, even in the half court. And some of the things that Tom said are true. His lateral movement's not the greatest. He does pick up his dribble too often. But the things that Ben Simmons does well in the half court and in transition lead me to believe he's more valuable at the point guard position than he is anywhere else on the floor.
If you put Ben at power forward, one, you're taking away everything he's special about him. The things that make him special is him as a facilitator. But two, if you think you have spacing problems now, wait until you have both Ben and Joel posted in the center. Who's going to be able to drive to the basket in that case?
Ben doesn't play the post-up position. He doesn't know how to.
Yeah.
I mean, he probably knows how to, but he doesn't do it often enough. You're right. There's going to be a clog down low. And then let me ask you this. Let's say that you do that and you, for what it's worth, you're taking Al Horford off the floor, and I'm assuming you're doing one of two things. You're either putting Thibel at the 2 and Jay Rich at the 1 when he's healthy, or in Tom's case, you have the quote-unquote traditional point guard, and you're putting Raul Neto to play the point, who's not as nearly as good of a driver as Ben, a little bit of a better shooter, to your quote-unquote traditional point guard. What happens in the fast break opportunity when it goes the other way? Let's say long rebound, kick out Siakam all the way down to whomever. Do you want Ben Simmons as the trailing defender? Or do you want Raul Neto as the trailing defender? I think Raul Neto's been a massive improvement to the backup point guard position. I think he is significantly better than TJ McConnell ever was. He gives you the ability to play that position. He's better than Jared Bayless. He's the best backup point guard they've had in this current system, this current Brett Brown system. And I don't know how close it is. But to say that you want the traditional point guard with what they've got on the roster, Howell Neto's your only option if you're going to put Ben Simmons down in that dunker spot. I just think that there are so many negatives to so few positives of putting Ben Simmons away from ball handling duties. I can't feasibly. I can't do it. 610-632-0975. If you are like Tom and you agree on that sentiment where you want to move Ben Simmons away from the point guard position, let's talk about it, because I don't see a feasible way that makes this team better by taking the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands more and putting it in the hands of Howell Neto more or Josh Richardson more or, quite frankly, any of the ball handlers they have on this team.
We tried the Josh Richardson point guard experiment early in the season. It didn't work. Josh Richardson struggled early in the season in that role. Then they let him be the shooting guard he's supposed to be.
And he thrived.
And he thrived. Yeah, I mean.
And they did it with Jimmy Butler. Butler took over late in games in the playoffs. And he was more of the it factor. But he's not a true point guard. Ben Simmons is. Guys, I hate to break it to you. I don't care what his height is. I know that when you plug your 2K game in, they don't let you make it a 6'10 point guard. Or at least they didn't used to, because they didn't come that way. But when you plug your 2K game in, you make your point guard 6'4". And that's how it is. But this is an ever-evolving NBA. And in an ever-evolving NBA, Ben Simmons is an ever-evolving point guard. So to me, there's no reason to take the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands. What are you going to do when Ben Simmons goes into that dunker spot and turns the ball over down low? I hope he doesn't, but let's just play hypothetical. What are you going to do when Ben Simmons turns the ball over down in that dunker spot? You're going to go, well, why is he there? Why is Brett Brown putting him there? Because it's not his natural position. He is a natural point guard. And that's just really all there is to it. Unless there's a total coaching regime change and whomever they bring in mandates that he doesn't play the point, which, by the way, if that mandate comes out, you can kiss another contract goodbye, at least with the Sixers, because he won't sign. I wouldn't either. But the natural position of Ben Simmons is point guard, and it's always going to be point guard until he cannot physically play the position anymore. 610-632-0975. We got one more segment for you before we shut things down for the evening. Dylan McKinnon doing a fantastic job producing the show. You've also heard his voice a couple of times tonight. I'm Tyler Zuli. We'll take you up until midnight right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Yes, one more segment to go here on 97.5 The Fanatic. You can find us just about anywhere you have a phone, a tablet, a computer, a radio, a laptop. You could probably even get us on an iPod. You could probably figure that out. Do they still make iPods? I don't even know if they do anymore. I have an iPod. Speaking of iPods, I have one. It's one of the old iPod Touches that I believe I bought, or maybe I got it for Christmas. I forget what it was, but one of the two. I got it in, I believe, my freshman year of high school. And it still works. And it's still in really good condition. And it still has the songs that I listened to when I was in all through high school. And it's great. So I wonder if they still make them. But you could probably find us on the iPod as well. 610-632-0975. You can catch us here until midnight. Got about 10 minutes left. I'm Tyler Zuli. He is Dylan McKinnon. We're here on The Fanatic. I do got to tell you about The Fanatic Holiday Wheel. It's back. This year, we will be spinning that wheel three times a day with the morning show and the guys at 8 a.m., Anthony Gargano at 1 p.m., and Mikey Miss at 5 p.m. Do you have a chance to win amazing prizes? You can go to the contest page on 97.5thefanatic.com. You can register now for a chance to become a Holiday Wheel contestant. Spinning that wheel starts in 8 days, December 16th, so Not this Monday, tomorrow, but it'll be next Monday. You got a chance to win some cool Fanatic swag. I don't know exactly what's all in it, so I don't want to promote things that aren't available, but I'm sure we've got some great gifts lined up for you for the holiday season. And if you don't get a chance to be on the Fanatic Holiday Wheel, you can always go to the Fanatic Pro Shop. That's here as well. You can get quality Fanatic Philadelphia sports-themed merchandise and apparel at discount prices. It is open for browsing now, just in time for this holiday gift shopping season. Because, by the way, I know a lot of places are telling you that you got to get your orders in the next couple of days if you want to get them here before Christmas Eve. So the Fanatic Pro Shop, you can do that at 975thefanatic.com. Matisse Thybulle has a career high in 20-point night as the Sixers beat the Toronto Raptors 110-104. We were talking about defensive efficiency earlier. I finally found that stat for us. Dylan, you were talking about how Ben Simmons effectively locked down Pascal Siakam throughout the night. That is true. He has a deficiency win share of just about 0.15, which for an individual player is really good because Joel Embiid is number one on players that qualify. We're taking DeAndre Ayton out. He's played one game. But for players for qualify, Joel Embiid is a 0.2 win share. Joel Embiid's a 0.2. Josh Richardson is a 0.17. Tobias Harris is a 0.16. And Ben Simmons is a 0.148. Al Horford is a 0.144. So all five Philadelphia 76ers starters are within the top 26 of defensive win shares.
That's incredibly impressive for Tobias.
Unreal.
Being a good defender.
Unbelievable how good this team has been defensively. Now, on the offensive side of things, they have to change a little bit. Because if we flip it to the offensive side of things, when you got on the defense, you've got five guys who are in the top 26 of defensive efficiency. Let's head to the offensive side of things, where you're not really thrilled about the way that they play at times. I'm going to try to get these the stats for offensive turnovers. And we talked about it. 2 years ago, they were dead last in the league. This year, or excuse me, 2 years ago, they were 27th. So let's go to these sortable team stats and talk about traditional stats, turnovers per game. Philadelphia 76ers, 16.5 a game. They are 27th. Eight turnovers in the final 8 minutes. You heard Brian Seltzer say it on the postgame show earlier today. Eight turnovers in the final 8 minutes. They had 12 in the first 40. So if you can average 12 turnovers over the course of a 40-minute night, or over the course of 40 minutes, I should say, that's 0.3 turnovers a minute. Get you to 14. And 14.4, instead of being 27th, 14.4 would be good for 10th. Well, I should say 11th. 10th is 14.3. You'd be ahead of the Milwaukee Bucks. You would be ahead of the Los Angeles Lakers and the Toronto Raptors. But instead, you are in 27th, tied with the Utah Jazz. Only the Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks produce more turnovers per game. So to say that there are spurts in which the Philadelphia 76ers have been inconsistent, have been struggling, a little sluggish, is very fair. This team, at its peak, 12 turnovers in 40 minutes, is unbelievably talented and unbelievably good. They are a finals team over those 40 minutes. The problem is, when you get that 10-minute stretch or that 8-minute stretch where you have 8 turnovers in 8 minutes, you are susceptible to comebacks. You are susceptible to losses that you maybe should not suffer. They have been, let's call it lucky, maybe good at the end when they need it to be, but lucky is a fair word to say in certain games. I think they were lucky against Utah to not have a collapse. They were lucky tonight against Toronto to not have a collapse. They need, the whole crux of this entire conversation today over the last 3 hours have been they need to put teams away when they have the opportunity to put teams away. They did it last night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. They were up by 44 at halftime. They won the game by 47. They had a 50-point lead at one point. That is not going to happen every night because you're not going to have 40-point leads every night. But when you have a 100-80 lead late in the fourth quarter, the final score should reflect more like 110-90. and not 110 to 104. This team is going to have to find a way to figure this thing out before the season kicks into high gear. They've got two more tough games coming up over the span of the next 4 days. They've got the Denver Nuggets, at home, and then they hit the road to go play Boston. They have the New Orleans Pelicans at home, but then they go back on the road for Brooklyn, and this is how they finish out the month of December. Miami, Dallas, Milwaukee, at Miami again, at Indiana. And a couple of games in between that I think they should win, including Milwaukee on Christmas Day. I think they're going to beat Milwaukee on Christmas Day. Not a should win. Those include Detroit and Washington at Orlando. Those are the should wins. But I think they beat the Bucks on Christmas Day. The Bucks have to come here. I have to imagine it's probably pretty tough to go on the road away from your family on Christmas, come into an environment like the Wells Fargo Center, which, by the way, is not going to be short on energy. Just because it's Christmas doesn't mean those fans won't be there. So I think the Sixers win that game. But it is a tough stretch, tough sledding coming down this next stretch. And it's really going to define how good the Sixers team is by how they play late in the game. Late in the game against Denver, late in the game against Boston, two games against Miami, a game against Milwaukee. Brooklyn is never a rollover type game. And you don't know what you're going to get from New Orleans. New Orleans is a team that has struggled this season. They are 6-17. But they've lost, let's count these up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games in a row. Twice to the Thunder. They're not a good team, but they may be desperate at this point. So we'll see what happens. It's a tough stretch coming up over the next 2 weeks. Really quickly, before we get out of here, just simply because, Dylan, you and I will not have a chance to talk about it before the game kicks off tomorrow. In 30 seconds or less, what is the Eagles' score? And why do you feel the way that they feel that way? I'll start. I am going to start with the Philadelphia Eagles winning this game by a score of 20-13. I think it's pretty ugly. I think it's going to be sloppy. The rain is going to be there. But the Philadelphia Eagles find a way to win this game in a low-scoring affair. Dylan, what do you got? I think it's going to be sloppy. I think that it's going to be low scoring. I'm interested to see what your thoughts are on this game.
If it's a low scoring game, I'll be more worried. If it comes down and it's close.
So you think an Eagles shootout actually benefits them?
Yeah, I think if Eagles are playing close, I'm going to be really worried at the end. Because we've seen this Eagles receiver corp and then the Eagles weapons completely fail to come up in the clutch late in games. I think they win this one. I don't think it's a blowout. I don't think it's like 30 points, but I think they win it by double digits.
Okay, so you got them winning by 10. I've got them winning by 7, a little bit closer, but we will see what happens tomorrow night. And of course, you can check out all the Eagles coverage, Eagles pregame show with Devon Givency headlines. But of course, we have Trey Thomas and Jason Avant and Brian Westbrook. They're all on it. And then you can talk to, during the game, you can talk in the green zone with Pat Egan and Tyrone Johnson. Should be a lot of fun. Then myself and Jamie Lynch will wrap things up for the postgame show tomorrow night. So we will get into all the Eagles conversation. It was a lot of fun tonight. I know it was a lot of Sixers, but we'll talk more Eagles tomorrow. We will get excited for this. That is right, Trey. It's game day. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm Tyler Zuli. He's Dylan McKinnon right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.